Welcome to the 261st episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. It is very hot and humid in Port Charlotte, Florida. That's good news for COVID, though, because most viruses can hang out in the humidity, and all those aerosols and particles that people spit out when they're talking and sneezing and coughing pretty much fade into the wind, just go straight down when it's really hot and humid. So it's good news for us. You may say, but gee, doc, your cases are really going up in Port Charlotte, or not Port Charlotte, but actually in the state of Florida, not really in my town. Our cases are going up. We're testing people. We're retesting people, but our hospitalizations and death rate has stayed low. So that's all good news for us. I hope your state is the same. The idea is to stay healthy and to make yourself as healthy as possible. And with that, I saw a headline in a journal article this week that says how to protect the aging heart. And, you know, right away I thought, well, you know, why do we just want to protect the aging heart? Why shouldn't we protect the aging muscles, the aging bones, the aging immune system? Because that's really what we're talking about when, the threat of an infectious disease epidemic or anything that's going around. There's still 660,000 cardiac deaths a year. There's deaths from peripheral vascular disease, as well as cancers and deterioration of people's muscles and bones that require joint replacements. And it doesn't necessarily need to happen. Bottom line is we need to use it or lose it. And I look at all these and, you know, again, the risk factors for lifestyle diseases are largely all the same. Being overweight is going to affect your immune system, your heart, your muscles, your bone. After age 30, we all start to lose muscle and bone mass if we don't keep very active. Our immune system starts to decline. Our white blood cells start to go out. And largely this is because of metabolic waste and the accumulation of it. It brings to mind a great aunt that I had who was an antique dealer. And when we would go visit her, and she had an antique shop beside her house, and there was stuff just everywhere in the antique shop, all over the place. But it morphed into her own house, and when you walk through her house, you kind of had to, you know, twist one way and then the next because there was stuff everywhere, and you can't see things because of the clutter. You know, if you go look at a model home, there are very few things sitting around. It looks so pristine because there's not a lot of clutter around. And, you know, my family will tell you that, I tend to be a clutter, especially on my desk or around where my mail comes in. But I like it when it's nice and cleared out and clean. But that's a lot like our bodies. You know, we accumulate clutter both on the outside and on the inside, and then even further on the inside when you look at the cell itself. We start to get all these metabolic waste products that come along with some of the good macronutrients that we take in. You know, it always comes to mind. People ask right up front, plant-based nutrition, why can't I have fish? You know, why can't we have that once in a while? And it's like, well, there's the fish package. You know, besides the overfishing and what we're doing to our environment, the package comes with omega-3s, and it comes with some protein, but it also comes with saturated fat and cholesterol and PCBs and mercury and dioxins. You know, the same thing comes with, you know, any animal product. There's a large amount of byproduct and waste associated with it. Packaged foods, if you look at, you know, a loaf of bread on the store shelf, there's a whole host of chemicals. Your body has to do something with those. And we add day in and day out more and more chemicals. And yes, the FDA, you know, and people say, well, these things are safe in these limited quantities. But nobody tests the safety of accumulating all these various chemicals in our body throughout the time. So yeah, it's hard for the lawyer or the legal system to say that one particular chemical is causing the DNA breaks or one particular thing is causing heart disease. It's accumulation of all these metabolic waste and, you know, the cell just being overrun with clutter. So one of the best things we can do is declutter. if you look at our white blood cells and you think of our bone marrow and our spleen and our gut microbiome and our colon, if there's a lot of clutter there, a lot of inflammatory waste, then how do those natural killer cells, how do all the cells that need to function actually function? It's very difficult. It's we spit out new cells in our bloodstream, and you know we keep relying on the endless supply of stem cells and new cells to be produced. But when the manufacturing sites, whether it's the mitochondria or the bone marrow, starts to become cluttered, it becomes difficult for that process to occur. And perhaps we, you know, overutilize. You know, it's like having a, you think about it as using paper towels. You know, if you have a paper towel rack and you keep grabbing a paper towel off of it, you know, for every little thing, you can, you know, quickly get rid of all the paper towels on the roll. When the supply is gone, it's gone. And that can happen with our stem cells. We have so many of stem cells that we can put out in a specific period of time. And it gets exhausted, mainly because of our bodies trying to fight all this metabolic waste. If you look at joint health, people say I have bone on bone, and that I need a knee replacement or a shoulder replacement. A lot of times that is really the pain is coming from all the inflammation in and around the tissue. And if you look pathologically at the bone, you see a lot of inflammatory cells. And once we get people eating a plant-based diet, get the oil and dairy out of their system, get them starting to exercise, when that inflammation clears, then their joint pain goes away. And despite having the same x-ray, they no longer have discomfort. Turn it over to the endothelial cell in our vascular system, not just blood flow to our heart, blood flow to our brain, blood flow to our legs, blood flow to our our organs. When the endothelial cell is disrupted and you accumulate a lot of inflammatory cells, a lot of lipids and lipid byproducts, the endothelial cell no longer makes nitric oxide, it can't dilate, we're not getting the blood supply to our tissues, and then the tissues start to die and deteriorate because of that. They also can't heal because of that. It's hard to heal a rotator cuff injury if there's a lot of inflammatory cells and decreased blood flow at the same time. So by changing your nutrition, eating your greens, producing nitric oxide, you'll gradually eat away at those plaques. Things settle down, but you're also opening up collateral vessels to get more blood flow to those end organs. Blood pressure drops. And, you know, everything kind of goes back to normal. What about diabetes? Well, again, the muscle cell is blocked by fat. The liver cell is blocked by fat. Glucose can't be taken up into the muscle or the liver. So your pancreas needs to produce extra insulin. That insulin drives inflammation and causes the release of insulin like growth factor, tumor necrosis factor, inflammatory cytokines that cause chronic inflammation, cause blood vessels walls to become more narrow, and again leads to more fat being broken down from the fat into the bloodstream. So your blood is thickened with glucose and insulin and cytokines and inflammatory cells and triglycerides, and ultimately you have decreased blood flow to your tissues. Increased risk of cancer, increased joint pain because of inflammation. The way around that is to clear out the clutter, clear out the fat from the muscle cell and the liver cell. So when that happens, we see people's glucose start to go down after they eat. They don't have such a giant rise in glucose after eating a meal. It's normal for your glucose to go up, but we don't want it to go up too awful high, and then it should come down to normal within about two hours. In diabetics, it may take 3 hours. It may never come down into the normal level. Overnight, your liver is producing glucose. It can't store glucose if the fat is blocking it, so you have this constant drip of glucose into the system, so the glucose can actually be more elevated in the morning. Take the fat out of the liver. Liver function improves. glucose starts to go down in the morning. The other thing that people don't take into account is the liver function as far as clearing toxins. So if you're getting in toxins from your food, toxins from skincare products, toxins from what you breathe, toxins from your medications and the metabolism of those, you can see how that really starts to take a toll on your liver function, especially if it's blocked with fat and it's not working well. So by clearing out the fat, your liver can start working again. So the risk of cirrhosis in a fatty liver is greater than people that drink in this country now, because we have so many people with fatty liver. High blood pressure is, something that we all seem to think is not a big deal as long as you take your medication. Everybody knows the number 140 over 90. That was really the old number. It should be less than 130 over 70 as far as a normal blood pressure. Automated blood pressure cuffs most of the time overread, especially in the situation where someone has a large arm or the wrist cuffs are even worse. But even if they're overreading by 20 or 30 points, if your blood pressure is 170, you still have high blood pressure. If your blood pressure is 140, your blood pressure is still higher than normal. So even though that number may be higher than it really is, if that number is high, there's still an issue. And the causes of blood pressure are basically vascular, like we talked about, with damage of the endothelial cell and lack of production of nitric oxide, so the blood vessel can't dilate. There can be a problem with the kidneys, which again can go back to the vascular or the blood flow to the kidneys or from the kidneys or within the kidneys that turn on hormones that cause the retention of salt and water. The kidneys like to see a certain amount of blood flow, so if there's narrowing of the blood vessels or the blood flow to them for any reason, whether it be a bad heart, decreased blood flow, or decreased volume, the kidneys turn on mechanisms so that the blood flow is increased to them. So they want to protect themselves at all costs. So the kidneys will turn on mechanisms to try to get more blood flow. So basically, if you retain sodium, then you'll retain water because you can't, your blood's not going to be, can't become too viscous. So then you retain salt, you retain water, the blood pressure goes up even more. Salt is a direct toxin to the blood vessel wall. It's also, again, excess of salt intake leads to increased volume and increased blood pressure. People say they eat a no-salt diet, but that's, impossible. If you eat, if you're a fruitarian and you eat, or you eat just vegetables and fruit, you get 700 to 800 milligrams of sodium a day that's in the vegetables themselves. So you really only have about 800 milligrams to play with. If you're somebody that uses a lot of sauces, typically they have a lot of sodium. Most of the serving sizes on a lot of these things will be, an eighth of a cup or a quarter of a cup. And, people will use two or three, four servings. And so on soups, it can be 600 milligrams. Beans that are in a can that are regular could be 650 milligrams for a half cup. So you can get a really high salt load. People typically are get 7, 8, 10 grams of salt a day, which is very toxic, again, to the blood vessel wall, but it also causes the retention of water. The other thing that we don't talk about so much is sympathetic tone. We have an autonomic nervous system basically you have our flight or fight, sympathetic adrenaline, tone. So that will increase our blood pressure, increase our heart rate so we can run away from something fearful. At the same time, it will shunt blood away. If you have a high sympathetic tone, it shunts blood away from your digestive system more towards your muscles so that you can actually move and run. So you have less digestion, you have more inflammation because, again, if we're going to fight something, if you have a fever or an infection, your blood pressure will typically go up before it goes down. People's blood pressure only goes down with an infection if it's overwhelming, and then there start to be all other kinds of hormones that are released. But for the most part, the beginning of a cold or some sort of infection, even or pain, is going to cause the blood pressure to go up. because of more sympathetic tone. On the other hand, your autonomic system, directed more by the vagus nerve, is going to decrease your heart rate. Your blood pressure will decrease. It's in a state of rest. You have more digestion, decrease in inflammation. Depending on your makeup and how you were raised and in your social situation, a lot of people stay more sympathetically driven than they don't have as many gears. They can't get to that parasympathetic, that low flow state, that nice calm state. They stay kind of on the upper end of that curve. If you breathe through your mouth or you breathe shallowly from your upper air, you know, just your upper airway spaces, you typically breathe off more carbon dioxide. If you breathe off more carbon dioxide, your hemoglobin will hold on to more oxygen because of the Bohr effect. If you deliver less oxygen to your tissues, that causes a constriction of the blood vessels because the blood, you know, the end organs need to get more blood flow. So you have a constriction and it drives your blood pressure. So just breath work can help to lower people's blood pressure. Or if they're breathing, again, through their nose or hyperventilating, is going to drive the blood pressure up. So how does medications fit into all this? Well, we have medications that will dilate blood vessels, but it doesn't fix the blood pressure abnormality or the blood vessel abnormality, the inflammation in the blood vessel wall, the fat and the cholesterol and the decreased nitric oxide production. So we can force the blood vessels to dilate a little bit and drive the blood pressure number down, but it doesn't fix the root cause. If you're eating excessive amounts of salt, we can give, and you're retaining water, we can give diuretics to help the kidney get rid of more water and salt. But again, that doesn't solve the problem of those hormones being turned on and salt being toxic to the blood vessel. If you have high sympathetic tone, giving one a beta blocker can decrease the heart's response and the blood vessel's response to that adrenaline, but it's not fixing what's driving your high sympathetic tone, inappropriate breathing, decreased oxygen to your tissues. So the root cause is not really being addressed in these with the medications, and we get a false sense of security. If you have kidney problems and the creatinine is abnormal and you continue eating the standard American diet, then the kidney function continues to get worse. The blood pressure continues to get worse. And there's a whole host of other hormones that are turned on that continue to cause a vicious cycle that's not treated by standard blood pressure medication. So the first thing to do, obviously, is to eat your greens, cabbages, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, kale. You know, the drill, collards, cauliflower, beets, beet tops, you know, getting 5 cups of that in a day, scattered throughout the day, is going to help you to produce nitric oxide. Getting rid of the salt shaker, getting rid of processed foods that contain sodium, getting rid of condiments that contain excessive amounts of sodium, looking at your sauces. You know, if you like a sauce, look at how it's made and just make it yourself without, and eliminate the salt. Sympathetic tone is a little bit more difficult to treat quickly. You know, I had a gentleman in the hospital because of eating really poorly with not being able to get groceries, and he was eating ham and cheese sandwiches that people brought him over and really salty soup, and we brought him into the hospital, and his blood pressure started dropping like a rock. We had to get rid of the medications really quickly because his blood pressure was decreasing. The problem is when we discharge him to home, if he goes back to eating the same way he was, then the blood pressure will go up. So we end up chasing our tail a lot. But we know just taking the salt out of the diet really will help a tremendous amount about getting the blood pressure down. Sympathetic tone, it's more, you know, again, on it takes a little bit more work because, you know, we, depending on your age, depending on your environment, you've grown up with a certain personality, you have certain people around you, certain situations. People can do meditation and do yoga and go to church and feel really good and their blood pressure can be down, and then as soon as they get back into their environment, their blood pressure goes back up. So being aware and really working on the breathing to try to get that low flow state in, get that low sense, that more of that parasympathetic tone can be very important. When you breathe with your diaphragm, you're activating your vagus nerve, which helps to activate your parasympathetic tone more. If you're breathing in your upper airways, that diaphragm sits still. You're not getting any advantage from activating the vagus nerve. So that's why that's all really important. And those are things we address when people come to my office. You know, we don't take people off of medications immediately. We address what the problem is, and then we wean people off as they get a hold of the situation. Again, I mentioned a few weeks ago, I had somebody say, can I just stop my medications? And of course not. If you have high blood pressure, there's a reason why you have high blood pressure. So it needs to be addressed. It can be reversed, but it needs to be addressed. You just can't say, I don't like to take medications that have a lot of side effects. And again, if you're on multiple medications, because that's typically what happens, you start with one, then you get another one. And people say, my body gets used to it. But really, if you require more and more medications, that just means you're getting sicker and sicker. Your body's not getting used to the medication, but your vascular disease is progressing. So you need to get a handle on that. Again, getting the salt out of the diet first and foremost is the first thing to go, and then getting the nitric oxide production is gonna help. But again, it has to be addressed. So let's look at some common scenarios on how things, the best laid plans, get messed up, so to speak. We were out and I got hungry and we just grabbed something. I hear that all the time. And then that leads to maybe you grab something light and then you came home and ate something really late or you kept picking. But most of the time, you know, that's poor planning. If you're going to the grocery store, you know, the old adage is don't go to the grocery store hungry. Have lunch before you go, or plan on picking up some salad or entree from the grocery store that you're going to bring home and eat. But, you know, don't plan on going out and then getting hungry because you haven't eaten. You know, so if you go to the grocery store, say 11 or 10:30, and so you're out later, you know, have a plan. Because grabbing something, you know, in quotes, is usually means going to get some fast food. And then there's a little bit of time where you're guilty. It's like, okay, I want to find something healthier than just regular fast food. So maybe I'll just have French fries, or maybe I'll just have this or that. But you're really making, it's compromise, or you're talking yourself into, well, this is not as bad as what it could be. You know, you're trying to, you know, it's not going to be a healthy choice for the most part. So the choice would be eat before you go out, plan on eating when you get home, or pack something with you if you're going to be out and you can't get back home, but you want to eat healthy. So, you know, maybe in a little Tupperware, your salad or something, so you can pull off the road, go to a park, eat out that way, or plan where you're going to stop for food before you get there. So don't start driving up and down the road looking for a place to eat. Know where you're going to go before you get there so that you could have researched the menu and you know what you're going to eat, and you know, it's according to, you know, what your nutrition guidelines are for yourself. Because, you know, when you start looking, you just kind of, you're hungry, you grab the first thing, and it usually just doesn't turn out well. The other thing, people say, well, I just grabbed something to eat in the car. Again, that's not a good food choice, because if you're going to eat on the run, then for the most part, you know, you just woof something down. You don't realize what you ate. You don't realize what the quantity is. It's usually not very good. And then again, you get home and you overeat or eat something else, or it leads to something else. So that's, you know, again, this poor planning that gets you into trouble. And then, you know, you start backpedaling, you know, I did this because this and this because of this. So to me, that's one of the worst scenarios of, you know, people getting off the wagon, especially, you know, because we were out. Because the reality of it is, a lot of people, especially if you're retired, you might be out every day. If you plan to go eat lunch out, then, you know, make sure you've researched where you're going to eat lunch out so that you have a plan and an option available. The other thing I keep hearing is this batch cooking and making a bunch of something and freezing it, or making a big batch and eating it, the same thing day after day after day. You might do that for a while. You might do that for something that you really like. But for the most part, when you eat the same thing over and over again, it leads to a decrease in diversity. So we know that people have the best microbes eat over 40 different fruits and vegetables in a week. So you're decreasing your diversity by eating the same thing every day. And you get tired of it. So it might be your favorite food, but if you eat it every day for a week, it may be such that you don't ever want to eat it again for years. And so you ruin it for yourself. Or you make a bunch and you say you'll freeze it, but then again, it doesn't sound good. I remember many years ago, I had to take a course out of town. And so I would fly out of town on a Thursday night and I would fly back Sunday, and I would essentially stay at the hotel and take this course, and the hotel food didn't really have much in the way of vegan options. So I found a Chinese place in a little strip mall called Ricky's Rice Bowl. And so I go to Ricky's Rice Bowl and I get steamed vegetables and white rice. And I'd eat that for the weekend. Steamed vegetables and white rice. And there was a little bit of a sauce that I would get. And I can't even remember what it was. But I got to tell you, after taking that course, I was so sick of stir fry that I don't, you know, anything that resembled a Ricky's Rice Bowl, I could not tolerate for over a year. I just, you know, it just turned me. One, it was the situation that I was in. I didn't really like being away for the weekend, and it wasn't really, really good. And, you know, I just didn't like anything about it. And it was just such bad. So I ruined steamed vegetables and rice for myself for a while. Think of enough of yourself to plan your menu. So, you know, just write it down on a piece of paper in the morning, what you think you would like. And, you know, stick to that. Give yourself an option. I liked Addie puts on her refrigerator door, her menu plan. You don't have to eat what you said on Monday and Tuesday. You can switch it around, but you have five entrees to choose from that you can have one night of the week that all sound good to you. It also makes for quicker shopping because you're going to get those items that you need to make those dishes so you can get in the grocery store and out of the grocery store. One of the last things I'll hit on is Environmental Working Group came out with sunscreen recommendations. You know, it's summertime, people are going to the beach. In Florida, we have, you know, everybody says, I have a base, but if people come down here, they end up getting fried. And, you know, it's a mess, especially with kids. You don't want that to happen. You don't want to have the bad sunburn. On the other hand, vitamin D is very important. Sunshine is very important. You'd like to avoid the UVA bad rays if possible, or limit them. But we know that most sunscreens don't provide adequate UVA protection. And last spring, the FDA actually said we're going to lock down on some of these companies and we're going to, limit the bad ingredients and put some warning labels on. Well, they've kind of dropped the ball and not really have done it. But if you want to look at what's deemed safe, zinc oxide is a safe, titanium dioxide is a safe sunscreen. It's the white one. It's not too pretty, but it will avoid getting the burn. So typically what I will do is, I'll get morning sun. If I'm going to be out, either I'll cover up or I'll put some sort of zinc oxide for especially areas that might be prone to burn. There's a lot of information that you absorb into your bloodstream some of these chemicals and sunscreens that have not been deemed safe, especially in the dosages that they have been able to measure in the bloodstream that stay there for a while. And, one of them, avobenzene, homosalate, octinoxalate. And if you go on to the Environmental Working Group, you can see those things that you should avoid. Certainly the PABA, the PABA, and the trolamine salicylate, they have been deemed unsafe, so avoid those at all cost. Oxybenzone, 40% possible hormone disruption. Again, children much more increased risk because you absorb a lot more of that than you should. Kids absorb more because of the skin surface area that they have. You want to avoid the sprays at all costs. You want to avoid anything that has the bug spray added to it. Those two chemicals together tend to be worse. So, again, sprays The risk of inhalation and lung damage, avoid those. And, you know, that kind of brings me to a topic of inhaling anything that you shouldn't. It never ceases to amaze me that people still smoke. I don't know that there's anybody in the world that doesn't realize that cigarette smoke is harmful. It's a carcinogen. It's even secondary smoke is a carcinogen, heart disease. I don't see why you would inhale anything. That includes vaping. Any kind of these things are toxic. They've been causing lung injuries. So there's no reason to inhale any kind of substance into your lung. I can't think of anything except good clean air. But so stay away from the sprays. So again, you know, I run early in the morning for the most part and do my yard work in the afternoon. I'll usually put on a little bit more covering to do my yard work. I wear a big straw hat to try to limit the sun on my face. We have started the plant-based Striders. We're on our second week. It's been now we're up to 6 people running. It's great. We have several people online. I think there's 18 members. If you'd like to be a part of the plant-based Striders on the Facebook group, please come over and join us. You don't have to live in Port Charlotte, Florida. You can run and send us pictures of where you're running. We are, you know, I'm going to run the Treasure Island Marathon in Florida March 1st. As a part of this running group. So we are training people in the practice to run this marathon. But we have people signed up for various other marathons and half marathons. So, you know, we'd love to hear from you. If you're running to join a community, I talked to somebody the other day and that was 65 and an avid runner. And you know, if you're a runner, you don't realize that people, especially in that age group, that aren't runners, have no earthly idea that they possibly could run. It's unheard of to think that anybody would over, you know, 40 would run if you're not in that running type. I can't run, my knees, you know, my hurt. And actually, I was at the hospital this week going over some disc with a radiologist and he brought up my knees and it's like, you know, I've been running for over 20 years and doctors in the doctor's lounge have asked me, aren't your knees going to bother you or aren't you going to have problems? And I can honestly tell you that my knees have never hurt. So if you have bad knees when you're running, it's either due to inflammation or you need to watch your running technique. And that's things that we're going to address in the plant-based Striders. But we have people that are running that have significant coronary artery disease, that have had bypass surgery, that have had stents, that have had both, and they're actively out there running. We have people that have had back surgeries that are out there running. We have people that have been told they have bone on bone with their knees, and that is just a picture. When you get the inflammation out of your system, especially out of your joints, your knees no longer hurt. Your x-rays may look the same, but your pain level is going to be down, so there's no reason not to run. This week, I signed up for the Rocky 50 in Huntsville, Texas. It'll be my first 50-miler, so I've got to amp up my mileage. I hope I'm not going into a repeat of last year, but we'll see if I can be somewhat smarter. California International Marathon's in December. Houston Marathon or Half Marathon might be in January. Rocky 50 will be in February, and the Treasure Island Marathon will be in March. So certainly going to be running, but in the run club, we have all phases of people that run and walk. No person left behind. If you know, it'd be great to start a group in wherever you live. We all start out 20 minutes, back 20 minutes, you know, and then we'll keep adding on that to that distance, but people turn around at 20 minutes, so we end up back where we are. If we lap somebody, we go back and get them, so we don't leave anybody out there by themselves, and we make sure everybody is healthy and everybody has a good time and there's camaraderie, and I think there's nothing we can do better than to have some social interaction and some positivity. We're starting to see people out on our walk, you know, that are also walking. They're not part of the group, but it's nice to say good morning as the sun's coming up. It's a great way to start Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday morning. So if you hop on over to the Facebook group, Plant-Based Striders, if you want to join in. You can always find links on my page as well. If you're interested in reversing your lifestyle diseases and becoming active, you don't have to be in Port Charlotte. You can join us online. We have a level one and level two. We're doing Zoom nutrition classes as well as in-office nutrition classes, so you can sit in on our live nutrition classes where I cook, and then I do a PowerPoint lecture, and then that's posted on our members-only website for viewing at a later time. But you can be an intimate part of the practice and not live in town. Our aim is to get people off of their medications, meet them where they are, and help them to go forward. We also, you know, focus on movement, and we want people to be active, and we do circuits and encourage people however we need to give them training plans so that they can get moving for them. Has to be tailored individually because, you know, one size doesn't fit all. Otherwise, we could say you should eat plant-based and go exercise and it would work. So we meet people where they are and help them to come along. It's never in a straight line. It's never every day is better than the last. There are bumps. There are snags. But the more support you have in a community like this, the better your chances are to become healthy and to stay healthy. So it's always nice to see people out joining the run club or coming to class or their families starting to convert to plant-based nutrition. It's always nice to see it grow. I also had a discussion, you know, it's frustrating sometimes when you can't get people to convert to plant-based nutrition. You think this should be an obvious for them. They have disease and they won't. People aren't ready. They're ready in their own time. We all converted when it was right for us. Something happened. The stars aligned. You read a certain book. You see a certain movie. So you just have to wait. You may plant the seed, but you can't get frustrated if somebody else doesn't become plant-based. You just have to be a good role model for them and hope that they will. That being said, you don't need to buy people crappy food to eat. If they want to do that on their own time, that's okay. But you don't need to feel obligated to prepare it for them. If you'd like to send me an email question, I'd love to have it. You can email me at jamie@drdelaney.com. It's jami@drdelaney.com. Visit the website to sign up for level one or level two. That is drdelaney.com. You can also sign up for our newsletter. It's spelled out DOCTORDULANEY. So I look forward to hearing from you multiple ways, either email on the Plant-Based Striders running site, join our practice. We want to make this community as big as we possibly can. We are here to provide you with support when you're ready. So I look forward to hearing from you. Have a great week. Happy 4th of July. Stay safe. Get your sunlight. Go exercise. Go run. And be kind to others.